Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
The Macko and Cause podcast is brought to you by our lawyer, Jeff Pollock. Need a lawyer? Try Jeff Pollock at jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. jeffpollock.com. 416-777-0088. 416-777-0088. How was that, Bob, for an opening? I did the live read commercial with our lawyer at the beginning instead of at the middle or the end. It feels like a real podcast.
Yeah, Matty, in a surprising turn of events, you made the opening of the show about you.
Well,
you were talking about someone else, but made it about you.
That's what I do, Bob. That's one of my superpowers.
Yeah, I know. I was on the air for 5 years with you. I'm well aware.
Admittedly, that superpower not good when the asteroid is about to strike Earth.
You know, God has many different children, and they're all needed for different things. And you're not the asteroid destroyer. You're the lightener upper.
Yeah, there you go. That works for me.
You're one of God's children who would somehow find a way to tweet about seafood towers while the asteroid is descending.
That's true. Actually, it's funny. Were you reading my Twitter account? I did a seafood tower tweet last night.
I saw it. Yeah. I saw it, and I kind of just chuckled to myself as I always do. That's Matt reading the room again.
We should tell people that goes when poor Jody, or is he Jody Ben from the Canucks, decided it's time to pick a fight with Wayne Simmons because Simmons hit Quinn Hughes or whatever. And I felt so bad for Ben. Maybe it's because also they were losing by a big score. Maybe if Vancouver was winning 7-2, I would be more happy with Simmons what he did. But I just kind of felt bad. I'm like, why is anyone fighting Wayne Simmons? So then I tweeted out my jaunty tweet saying, I would never fight Wayne Simmons, even if he wanted a heavy Cabernet Sauvignon to pair with our seafood tower.
I saw that, and it was Vintage Matt. Matt talking about vintages. And then I also thought to myself, Matt, you wouldn't want to fight Wayne Gretzky. You've never been in a fight.
I've never thrown a punch really at anger ever. Yeah. Yeah. I've gone 45 years with that. I'm going to try to keep that streak alive.
I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
It's definitely a pick your spots situation.
Mm-hmm. I'm small. What do you want me to do? You know, if I fight someone, it's going to be like an elderly man who's like 4'2". That would be very unbecoming.
Maybe that's the point. Maybe you should fight an elderly man.
All right, Bob, I got to go right now.
Take on Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, exactly. Take those mittens off and raise those mitts. We're going to fight.
There you go. You ready for this one? And then we can move on. Bring in mittens to a boxing match.
Exactly. Ooh, here comes the right fist of capitalism. Pow-pow. Here comes bailout for billionaires. Pow-pow.
Oh, man. I had to unplug from the world of politics this week because it just felt, in the spirit of Groundhog Day, like it doesn't matter what happens. It's always going to be the same. Ever twas it thus.
Yeah, I mean, you figure, hey, everything's going to be easier. And maybe it will, but it's still early.
You know, and I found myself kind of slipping into the rabbit hole of, as soon as you start sending out a few really pretty angry tweets, like not angry, because I don't think I'm ever angry, but I can sort of use pointed language.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, you're just that guy, you know? Like, there's just a lot of stuff happening, vaccine rollout, school reintegration, you know, the shit show that is the Republican Party. Like, there's just lots going on. And I'm like, man, I don't think I'm helping. And I'm probably making things tiny, tiny bit worse. So why don't I just shut up?
You know what I would recommend, Bob?
A seafood tower?
Tweet about a seafood tower. Yeah. You know, everyone's on board.
Well, I did my version of that. I tweeted about WandaVision this morning.
I saw that. How is that show, by the way?
Well, Matt, would you like the simple answer or would you like the Bob's been thinking about this answer?
Can I get something in between? You know, like, I don't want to insult you by saying the simple answer, but the podcast is only an hour. So I think door number two isn't the best one either.
I think it's an interesting show. I think that it's, I don't know if anything connected to the MCU can ever be innocent because there's so many things that it has to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I really liked about The Mandalorian was, even though they were clearly setting up a new universe, at least you kind of got to do stuff in that universe.
Right.
That felt like a show. I think that was really, really good. With WandaVision, it's like everything feels so deliberate. It's almost like a first date where everything's being watched and judged. So it's a kind of an almost a, I don't want to use the word anxious when you watch it, but it's not like relaxing. It just feels like you're trying to set up 23 movies in one show.
Right. Yeah. They do have that burden. Is it like, and again, we both love Better Call Saul, but is it like the first episode of Better Call Saul on a loop?
Yeah. It's interesting you say that because as a show, I'm not even sure WandaVision, like we can know anything about it because it's so connected to the MCU. And the fun of it is not watching it. The fun of it is trying to figure out where they're going with this.
Like, oh,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There was a little bit of that with Better Call Saul, like, ooh, now I see Mike. Ooh, now I see Tuco. And it's impossible not to do that if you like the show that it comes from. So with the MCU and that huge universe, it's like, and I do this myself. The first thing I do is I run online and see, did I notice all the same things as everybody else?
Right. Yeah.
You know, yes. Like the show isn't even a show. It's just an excuse for me to have an online community.
Okay, yeah, so you can't really be present with the show because you're just thinking about the MCU past and what the future's going to be. So it's hard to just enjoy the moment.
You know, I think in the tweet I described it as a show, I don't know, but it's basically a basket of Easter eggs.
Right, yeah, that is a perfect way. That is how you tweet it. That makes total sense.
But I am enjoying it, but that's because I'm an MCU nerd, you know, and there's a real joy in that, too. And I think it speaks to why we watch stuff now is nobody wants to watch a show. Everybody wants to belong to a community.
Mm. Yeah, that was one of the big things about Game of Thrones. It was one of the few things where it was appointment television because you felt like you were part of something bigger.
You know, and actually, what it kind of reminds me of, and this is not just a sort of a convenient segue. It actually really does remind me of this. Sports understood this for years before TV did, is that the games are great and the games are important, but what's really important is the conversation around the games. That's where true sports fandom lives. Anybody can watch the game. You kind of, you know, like the casual fan is the guy or the woman who can watch a period and a half of a bad game and turn it off.
Yeah.
The real sports fan has to watch all of it because they know what to be mad about on Twitter.
It's so true. It's so true. By the way, it's a perfect segue to sports, but can I, you mentioned things going on. Can I have one hot take about the vaccine rollout?
You know, I feel like Aaron O'Toole is a bad communicator. I think.
No, me have a hot take, not you.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah, of course. I'm just not used to that.
Okay. No, Bob, I am. Clear the deck. It's time for old cause here to get political. I want everyone to get the vaccine because I'm tired of the B-roll. You know, when you watch CP24 and they talk about Moderna or Johnson & Johnson, and it's always the same shot from the lab with hundreds of little mini vials all collecting and together and then being divided up. And it's the same B-roll that every news station uses. I'm tired of this B-roll.
Yeah, can I give you my favorite piece of invented B-roll for articles?
Yeah.
Pretending to work at a desk.
Oh, yeah.
Describe what someone does for a living, and then they show the shot of them on, like, and they're typing at the laptop.
Yep. They're clicking the mouse. There's always a moving and clicking of the mouse.
You're right. There is a clicking of the mouse. You know what would be really funny is if it was like what you really do at work and you're quickly closing windows. You don't want your coworkers to see that you've had open.
Yeah, there's your fantasy football league. There's pornography. There's fan fiction of WandaVision. It's all there.
Real life B-roll.
Ooh, that's a good bit. Real life B-roll.
hanging out at the coffee machine and just trying to, like, you know, talk about something and stretch out your coffee break a little bit. here I am wasting time at work.
Yeah. I love it.
Real life B-roll. See, Matt, you'd be a good news producer.
Yeah. Ooh.
Okay, let's get back to sports, though, because I did want to talk about this. I want to throw, obviously, we're going to talk about the Super Bowl, but can we start with the Leafs first?
Of course.
Okay, great. Because, you know, I've been listening, I've been watching about half the games and listening to all the coverage. And it's actually given me a really interesting take over the last few days. Because what I see on the ice and what I hear in the coverage don't feel like they're talking about the same season.
I agree.
I keep seeing wins. You know, there was the loss to Edmonton, but by and large, like, there's a lot of wins. And then I listen to the coverage and I keep hearing about how bad the team is doing. So help me out here, Matt. How is it that I'm watching a team that's winning and yet the media leads every story with, and here's what was wrong with that win?
Yeah, I'm going to just blame Jonas Siegel and James Mertl. It's 100% their fault. No, I mean, listen, it's because a lot of the underlying numbers before last night, now they're all going to get juiced up. All the underlying numbers didn't look great. Now, to be fair, obviously making fun of Jonas and Mertl, they kept saying over and over again, small sample size, small sample size. The even strength numbers didn't look great, the shots, this and that. But the eye test looked great. You know, it looked like even when the other team had possession of the puck, it didn't feel like Anderson was getting peppered, you know, with like where there was three members of the other team treating him like a pinata. So the underlying numbers didn't look great, but the eye test looked good. The team kept winning the entire time. I was not panicked or at all freaked out by some of the poor even strength numbers.
This may be weird to say, but I care a lot about the analytics of stuff, but
of course,
not game to game, and not more than winning. Like it may portend that there's bad stuff around the corner. Maybe they'll just start playing better and it'll be a hell of a season for them. But nobody ever said, you know, our expected goals against at 5-on-5 wasn't very good. Therefore, we take the 2 points back.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah. Also, Bob, you know, it's a thing we haven't been hearing. Hmm. Oh, we got to start on time. Oh, we have to, we learn lessons. Oh, we bounce back. Oh, we've got to be mentally tougher. Like none of those things have been part of the dialogue. The negative dialogue until last night is how come Tavares hasn't scored at even strength?
And Tavares himself has said, you know, we're really trying to play a more disciplined game. And Sheldon Keefe will say, look, they can open up it a bit more, you know, and part of this is, they didn't have a training camp and there's new bodies and, you know, Joe Thornton shouldn't be a key injury, but maybe it is because they're a bit thin on the wing. And that's because they had to get rid of two decent scoring wingers in order to make the defense better, which is better. Like the problem with saying it's a small sample size, and I don't blame anybody in the media for this, it's just the nature of the beast, is you say it's a small sample size and then you have to make the point as though we're still relevant. Because you can't say nothing. Like, you can't have an article saying, there's not really much to say about last night, because it's a small sample size.
Yeah.
It's more like, but if this did continue.
Oh, yeah.
It would be bad.
Yes. And actually, like, you know, I've enjoyed the coverage of it, but I agree with you. I've said the same thing. I'm like, we're getting greedy. We wanted the team to be better defensively. They are. And if they're going to be better defensively, that's going to be an adjustment. And what does that adjustment look like? It's going to look like fewer high danger chances on the offensive end for the Maple Leafs. And, you know, so the team's gone through some of that.
So Jonas put out a piece about how Mitch Marner, he could take a run for the Art Ross. They're playing in the North, which is clearly terrible. It's a chance to feast on some bad teams with some multi-point nights. If he stays healthy, he could be in the contention for top point getter in the league. And yet at the same time, I see all this coverage saying, we haven't seen him as good as he could be yet. What the hell does that even mean? You mean he didn't have an incredible game every single night? Like, it's, what are people's standards?
Incredibly high. And part of it, as I always say, is it's a tip of the cap to the talent.
17 points in 10 games. I think that's pretty good.
Agreed. And that's not even including the game he had last, you know, the points he had last night against Vancouver. Right. He's he's been good. Matthews has been good. Like, you know, and I mean, but the problem is they've said it and Keith says it, like, yeah, you know, we still are leaving stuff out there, you know, so they're saying that as well.
Oh, for come on. Like, that's like,
I know,
Chuck talking about we won 35-3, but, you know, that we got to clean up some of the defensive mistakes. Oh, what? The one that led to a field goal?
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Look, I don't think the Leafs are playing like a team that feels inevitable at this point. They've clearly got some stuff to work out. 5-on-5, yeah, they could do better. Their power play, you know, there's two ways of looking at this. The power play is amazing, and it's the best in the league. And if they keep this going, it's probably going to paper over some other flaws that the team has. But if they got into the playoffs and they can score on the power play with some decent goaltending and play a tighter, more defensively responsible game, do we hate their chances?
No.
We'd like them to be a little better 5-on-5, but how many times have we said in the playoffs, you know, that second unit on the power play is just not doing it? Well, maybe this time it will. I mean, geez, I played Boston close to game 7 twice. It didn't take much, you know, much of a push to get them to win.
And also, they're going to be better at even strength. That's the thing, because the body of work says, don't worry, it'll happen. And that's not a small sample size. That's a larger sample size.
If there's one narrative that you would like to rewrite that's kind of taken some roots with the Leafs season this year so far, which one do you feel like you're not calling it wrong or dumb, but maybe we're just missing kind of the point? If there was one that you could say, let's push it in this direction, which would it be?
Well, we've already discussed the even strength one, so I'll move. I could go with that one, but you know, I'll go and they look good last night, but I'll go with Brody and Riley, you know, and people are a little bit concerned because some of the possession numbers, you know, haven't been great, but you know, they're playing against the top level competition. And for the first time in ages, you know, the Leafs have two different defensive pairings that are usually doing their job.
Mm-hmm. The Brody Riley one is really interesting because nobody knows what to expect of them just yet. There's been this sort of floating hypothetical theory that says if you put Riley with somebody really good, finally, then yeah, he's going to look like a Norris candidate. I don't know that that's a fair assumption to make. It might put too much pressure on him. Maybe he's just a good NHL defenseman and you put him next to another good one and you got a good pair. You know, like this idea that suddenly he's going to turn into, you know, Brett Burns or something, you know, like maybe he's just not that good.
Well, you know what, though? You know what's funny, Bob? You know what we're not talking about this year through 11 games? We're not talking about need to upgrade the defense.
Yeah.
I mean, the conversation was after the injury to Thornton and Nick Robertson, it was actually, do we trade a defenseman to get another forward? We've never had that conversation. The fact that it's even being leaked and out there and whispered and talked about shows you that, you know, whatever you want to say about any underlying number of Riley and Brody, defense ain't the problem. And you know what? I'm here for that because I'm tired of every year talking about how do we improve the defense. We've delightfully not had that conversation as much.
You know which one it is for me? Okay, so that's good. So you would have the maybe take the foot off the pedal on those guys and let them get settled in. All right. For me, it's the Nylander conversation, which feels like whatever. I don't know what it is about this market, but every 5 games we have to have a referendum on whether or not Nylander's grown up.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thought: he's a goal scorer. He's an offensively minded player. He makes $7 million a year. He would be the millionth NHL good goal scorer that's streaky and is sometimes aloof, but sometimes really dialed in and sometimes dazzles you with what he can do and sometimes makes you bang your head against the desk because they're not playing the game the right way. The NHL has always had a million guys like that. It's like wide receivers who don't run hard on every route, but every once in a while they dazzle and you go, that's why they're there.
Yep.
And you know, the wide receivers who can make those plays and run hard every route, you know what they call them? Great players. And the ones who aren't like that, you know what they call them? Good players.
Yeah.
And maybe this whole conversation of Nylander has to be this, Nylander has to be that. Maybe Nylander just has to be another in a long series of guys who can really give it to you one night and not another night. And that's just what it is. And at the end of the season, it's going to average out to about 60 to 70 points. And he makes $77 million a year. And that's who he is.
Yeah. And that's, and you can win with that.
It's, you know what, at $7 million a year, if he can put up between 25 and 30 goals and get you something in the vicinity of 60 points at $7 million, let's not worry about what David Pastrnak makes, okay? That's like the Steph Curry contract. It's just not fair. It just happened, and it's not a real comparable. It's like maybe he's not Marner, and there's a reason why Marner makes 11 and he makes 7.
You know what? The funny thing about all that you said there is, are like even the conversation back to, you know, oh, Marner could do more or this or that. And but then with Nylander, I think everyone would like those guys more if McKinnon and Pastrnak and, you know, and Braden Point, if every player on Tampa, Colorado and Boston, you know, held out to get paid every dime they could. If those guys did that, I think we'd like Nylander more.
It's so true, Matt. And at $7 million, like, I feel like every 3 weeks, you just have to rotate the Nylander conversation. It's a steal at $7 million. Or 3 weeks down the road, he's not giving it as hard as he can every single night. And, you know, for the Leafs to win, he's got to be better than this. It's like, no, they know who he is.
He's you're barbecuing a chicken. You know, you're rotating it. It's like, oh, got to flip it over. You know, got to brown that side. Okay, you know, you just, you know, it's a pig roast. It's a pig. You're in a pig roast.
The thing that amazes me, though, and this is just the hyper focus of the Toronto sports media, is that the cycle hasn't even gone to 3 weeks now. Like, literally, you can do this from period to period now.
Well, there's only 56 games. We got to get as much of it in as little amount of time as possible.
Small sample size. That's every article, I feel, you know, that isn't some sort of broader look at stuff. But assessing an individual's play should be three words long. Small sample size.
And then the midpoint of the season comes, and then you're allowed to get freaky. You know, then you're allowed to drop small sample size and put on the ball gag and the executioner's mask and just go to town with your analysis.
Okay, so based on what we've seen, you know, I'm going to kind of reverse this here. Based on what we've seen, what narrative do you think is proving to be true, and do you feel comfortable will be true all year?
I think the narrative that, you know, okay, well, the easy narrative is that the stars will lead the way, and the stars are leading the way. You know, we've seen it almost every night, and part of it is more increased minutes, at least for that first line. I think that one is here to stay. I don't think that one's going anywhere.
I think that the bottom six are not going to contribute enough is almost like the negative flip side of that, and I think that's going to continue too. That getting rid of Janssen and Kapanen, even if those guys weren't amazing last year, they were still supposed to be good wingers for this team. Even if it wasn't them, they were playing the role of the good wingers that the Leafs need. Nick Robertson going down, Joe Thornton getting hurt, it's kind of exposing that they're a little thin on scoring on the wings. I don't know that they have enough depth to make up for that. And so it's great that the Stars are carrying the team, but I don't think they're going to have any option but for that to be true, because there isn't much beneath them. And barring a trade, I don't think that that's going to change. Their bottom line, I think sometimes we obsess a little bit too much because this is Toronto and we care about every player so much. You know, but that fourth line is still going to play only like 9 to 12 minutes a night. It's not like they're out there much. Third line's a bit of a concern. Like Mikheyev, is he ever going to score again?
Listen, two things. One, Jason Spezza is very angry at you about dismissing the fourth line. But yeah, that's the big one to me is Mikheyev. Like, Mikheyev's now hit that state. Like, I was going to tweet this out last night. Things are going so well for the Maple Leafs. Mikheyev may actually score, you know, or I would have worded it more clever than that. Actually, I probably wouldn't have. And then I would have added, you know, Pinot Noir, just a mask for my inability to be clever. But, you know, so much of it just goes on Ilya Mikheyev. You know, that's the one guy.
He's been possessed by the spirit of Kapanen for me in the sense that he's the player where you watch him and here's what you do. You go, ooh.
Yep, that's it. Ooh. Kapanen's the, he's the Phantom of the Opera.
What's that?
Kapanen is like the Phantom of the ACC. He's up there in the rafters, you know, and he's singing, and here comes Mikheyev. He's got the puck. He rushed by that defenseman. Ping! Oh, fuck! Yeah. I just improv'd Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yeah, I think we knew it was an improv.
how dare you?
No, that was actually really good. Good for you. Yeah. Make sure you put that in your episode notes. Matt sings Phantom of the Opera for Kapanen.
Yep.
yeah, he's that guy who you go, ooh, wow, he's really skilled. Oh, geez, he's never going to score, is he?
That's exactly what it feels like. It's like the you know, the guy that was great on. Nah, that actually, I had an analogy, but it doesn't really work. It's just frustrating. Everything looks great about him until he gets close to the net. And then you're like, what the hell just happened?
I don't know how good the Leafs are or how good they aren't, because the North Division is so bad. Like, when you beat Vancouver 7-3, you know, I think you and I could probably grab a couple guys and give them a run for their money. You know, like, they're a bad team. Ottawa's terrible. Winnipeg, I don't know who they are. I still don't know who they are. Edmonton is starting to feel like some kind of prison for Connor McDavid. Calgary's underperformed. Like, really, other than Montreal, nobody's playing well. So, you know, they may be sitting at the top of the division, but, you know, that's not saying much. If they had to play a good team, you know, from the Pacific or something, or whatever the hell they're calling it these days, how would they look then? How would they look against Colorado?
Or how would they look at, you know, in the, you know, you're right. The problem is that Edmonton and Vancouver have both certainly regressed defensively in net. Like, you know, there's issues there. So it's hard to have a true assessment of who the Leafs are. Like, we can agree on this. The Leafs are a good, often very good team. Montreal has gotten off to I know they lost to Ottawa last night. They've gotten off to a really good start. Like, Montreal is the official, we nailed the off-season team in the NHL.
I will say this. The one thing that makes me think that the Leafs are looking for maybe some darker clouds ahead, barring last night, the goal differential is not very high.
Nope, it is.
I think they were only +4. Into last night's game. Games like that, obviously, like, they create artificial spikes, but it just, you feel like playing these shitty teams, they should be able to put up more points. That one feels like an indicator, like a real indicator that maybe there's something there.
Yeah, the goal differential, that's one always makes you nervous. So on the other side, just, it may be because, like, every day, you know, I got to go through the quotes and stuff. This team, as I said on the show, the team feels a little bit boring because they're doing their job. I like the fact they're not a defensive tire fire. I like the fact that I'm not watching. And even sometimes there's been stretches in a Calgary game, an Edmonton game, where the other team outshot them 14-3. But it hasn't felt like the Leafs are getting caved in, you know, during those stretches that we've seen the last bunch of years.
I'm going to make an analogy here to the political world.
All right.
You know what Biden said the other day?
What?
I don't know either. Because he doesn't say much. Whatever it is, it's not very interesting.
Yeah. And
it's almost like we wanted that so bad. We wanted to be bored. You know, don't make me wake up and run to Twitter because, you know, there's another fire to put out.
Yeah, I have to say, I am enjoying that the president of the United States isn't in a Twitter war with Alyssa Milano. That's a pleasant surprise.
You know, what was this, you know, like, there's so many moments, you don't even know where to go, like, but sometimes I'll stop and I'll think, he got into a Twitter war with LeVar Ball.
Yeah, it's so true. It's like, Trump, are you Stephen A. Smith? What are you doing?
did you see the letter to the SAG Guild?
No.
Yeah, they're repealing his SAG membership.
Mm.
Basically wrote back, I don't know who you are. I'm very proud of my work. I couldn't care less about you, and your group sucks. From the desk of Donald J. Trump.
God, it would have made so much more sense if he was a drunk. The fact that he doesn't drink, it screws the brain even more.
That's an amazing point by somebody who's a real student of history, because the one thing we don't know the truth about, what decisions were made by loaded people.
Yeah, exactly. Stone cold sober every time with him.
That's so funny, Matt. They're so right, man. Like, because you like Russian history, and that's why you're used to drunks making bad calls.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, by the way, the entire First World War was basically, you know, just a bunch of young guys in the trenches, but they were all drunk because it was a way to help just at least keep their spirits up and convince them that that barbed wire won't hurt you, you know. But again, Trump, sober.
I you know, this is funny coming from me because I'm a bit of a teetotaler, but I really think one of the keys to modern life is people should drink just a little more than they do.
Yeah.
You know, during the day.
Yeah, I'm not. Listen, as long as you're not driving anywhere and the kids are safe, you know, the odd drink ain't going to kill you.
Yeah, see, I don't mean get loaded. What I mean.
No, I know. Just a little. Take the edge off.
Well, because you also can't smoke anymore. So people have to go and have a smoke, and that's where they would have their 10-minute reset. But they're like the internet, like Instagram is not a good replacement for cigarettes or a glass of wine in terms of staying calm.
Yes, agreed.
Now, that stuff does kill you over time. There is that.
So could, you know, so could Instagram.
Good point, Matt. Excellent point by you. You want to talk Super Bowl?
I do. And the first thing I want to discuss with the Super Bowl is I'm watching the game alone.
Wow. When was the last time that happened? Has that ever happened?
It's the smallest was when I was in Naples, Florida, when I went down to see the Super Bowl in Tampa. And then I thank God, because the Giants got killed by the Ravens. I remember I drove to Tampa and I had like 800 Canadian, which in 2000, that was a lot of money. That's still a lot of money now. And I remember getting off the highway and on the off ramp, whereas, you know, cars are going super fast, there was human beings standing there with like a row of American $100 bills with a sign saying, "We'll pay top dollar for a ticket." I knew 10 seconds after getting off the I-75, I'm like, I'm not going to be able to afford a ticket to this game. So eventually I went home. I watched it with one friend who came to Florida with me and my mom, my uncle, and my Sesta, my mom's husband.
Now, I'm so sad to hear that story, Matt, because you really like, you're the maitre d', you're the master of ceremonies, you're the guy who brings it all together. Like, you're the only person I know who, over the age of 40, still has big get-togethers.
Yeah.
Oscar night or Halloween or you know, Christmas parties at your house. Like, most people, honestly, like, they're just tired. They just want to go. You know, like, oh God, I don't even want to get out of my pajamas. But you're the other, you're the opposite. You're like Bruce Wayne. You're like, where's my tux?
Yep. It's true. But but this year, you know, everyone just decided, you know, not going to do it. So I'm going to go to Apache Burger, get my double burger fries, medium grape drink. I think I'll also cook up some homemade wings and probably some sort of like dessert. So that's going to be my like 10-hour gorge, but I'll be doing it alone.
That's, you know, you raise an interesting sidebar conversation here, which is if you are going to eat alone, what's the right thing to eat? And what's the right amount? Because, you know, if you get a burger and wings and you make some ribs, like you're not going to eat all of it. And it's also not fun to eat too much when you're by yourself. You don't have the shared experience of, you know, diving into a bucket of chicken.
That is true. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You don't have the communal experience, but it also allows you to up your shame eating game. You know, the energy when no one's awake and you grab the thing you shouldn't and you know you won't even remember eating it the next day, but fuck it. YOLO. You know, you get to channel that energy.
Matt, shame eating game, what's that?
I've never heard this term before.
Shame in food, What? See, right. Because you have to schlock out. I was walking past the butcher shop on Ronsonsville's the other day, and they had an advertisement for, you know, 20 bucks and a pre-prepared side of ribs. And I thought, well, it's got to be something. If it's not going to be ribs, what's it going to be? Because, like, I'm not even, like, I care about the Super Bowl this year. It's not like, you know, it's not like Buffalo made it. I don't have a horse in the race, but it just feels wrong not to have a big meal. Like the Grey Cup, I often can't tell you who the starting quarterbacks are, but I'll still have a big meal.
Bob?
Like, what am I going to do? Have a salad?
Yeah, I know. Oh, no. You're 100% right. It calls for it. Like, Like, that would be it. Watching the game alone, it's fine. You know, I'll be working and, you know, eating all that. It'd be good. But eating healthy during the Grey Cup or the Super Bowl, that to me is a cry for help.
You know what actually is a really good alone food to binge on? Because you don't have to cook it? Pizza. And you know what? Get the large and see if you can eat the whole thing.
Spoiler alert, you can.
I know, you sure can. Shame eating, what's that?
By the way, the listeners need to know this, that in my Super Bowl party, it is the hardest party. We have the same group every year. And the one or two times where someone is like, hey, can I bring my cousin? He's visiting from Calgary. And we all hate it. And we talk behind the guy's back the entire time. Like, we are as catty as it gets. The only time that anyone was invited to our Super Bowl party with open arms was Bob Mackiewicz, because we were at a stag event at Woodbine Woodbine Racetrack. And everyone watched Bob eat at the buffet. And my friend Tom looked at me and goes, Bob, that guy can eat. He can come to the Super Bowl party. That's how you got the only real invite, the Willy Wonka golden ticket.
Yeah, that's so funny. I didn't realize there was a pre-scout.
Oh, yeah. A total pre-scout. Like, the only time I can remember someone that wasn't within the group was invited to the Super Bowl party was you.
That's so funny. Were you and Tom like up in the crow's nest in a minor hockey arena with some styrofoam cups of bad coffee just watching me eat?
Yep. We're either that or, you know, we were like the football coaches on the tower, you know, wearing the hat, you know, like the Alabama head coach hat. And we got the whistle.
That's so funny. Well, I have to say, it was one of my favorite nights out. I generally don't like new people. They make me nervous, but your friends are really great. And I knew them well enough that I was kind of comfortable. I also didn't understand the magnitude of what had happened, which probably was helpful.
Yes.
I was nervous. And it was an evening based around eating, which I feel like I was, it was something I could do.
Yeah. You were in your element.
10.4 pounds, Matt. I gained 10.4 pounds.
Nice. Nice. My record's 8.7. The all-time record is my brother, Josh, 13.1.
It's almost, no, I'm going to take out the almost. It is gross to think you can put on that much weight at one sitting. Mm-hmm. The best is the guys trying not to go to the bathroom.
Oh, yeah. Because then you're going to shed some LBs. And that's not going to help you to win the contest to see who can gain the most weight.
The key to your brother Josh winning is that he researched it and figured out that if he drank iced tea and ate pizza exclusively, that it would metabolize slower and therefore would not like it would be like undigested in his gut longer and way more.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He researched it. Just the right amount of like carbohydrates, you know, the breads, the sugar from the iced tea. It was a perfect combination.
You know, what's amazing. And this is generally true. And I don't blame just you and your friends for this. I blame stoners for this. I blame people who are into memes, like all this stuff that diverts people's attention. If we could collect all that brain power, I think we could fix every problem on earth.
Yes.
Like, stoners can't sign their name to a check, but you know, they can create a super bong out of a pineapple and a screwdriver.
It's true. The problem is, the real problems are hard and scary and they make you cry. But, you know, the amount of food and weight gain, that also by the end is kind of scary and makes you cry.
Well, it's true. You know, my daughter, like, I'll watch her make memes and she'll open up the computer and she's flying through and her hands are flowing like water. Like, she knows exactly what to do. But there are socks on the ground.
Yep.
You know, like, why is it you don't know how to pick up a sock, but you know how to, like, run, you know how to boss your DOS?
Yeah, I don't even know what that one means, but I do know how to clean up.
I think it's an old reference, digital operating system. I think it was kind of like a 90s reference, but anyway.
Bill Gates on it with me.
Okay, so buddy, Super Bowl.
Yes.
I got no thoughts.
I
didn't research it. I got no thoughts.
We'll start big picture, and then we'll break down, you know, will Shaq Barrett, will they use him to chuck Kelce at the line of scrimmage to try to disrupt the passing tree? The funny thing is, after Tampa lost to Kansas City, You could say the Bucks have been the better team. They've won seven in a row. They beat Breeze and Rodgers in the playoffs. They're healthier than Kansas City. They've scored 30 or more points in each of their three playoff games. Yet most people, including me, I'm still taking Kansas City. And Kansas City's without their starting left and right tackle. I'm taking the Chiefs, and I feel pretty good about it.
I don't know anything other than sort of what happens generally, historically. And that's the best quarterback tends to win.
Yes.
And I don't know if I can put it any more simply than that. Like, you could talk about strategy. You could talk about who's injured and who isn't. But in the end, it just feels like Patrick Mahomes is ready and Tom Brady is old.
Yeah. And by the way, people are going to yell and scream about, what about Brad Johnson or Trent Dilfer? That was during an era where defenses could get away with a lot more than what it is in the last 10, 12 years. And you know what's funny, Bob? This is the first time since 2001 that Tom Brady goes into a Super Bowl where he is the inferior quarterback.
Yeah, it's been a long time. You know, I can't cheer for Tom Brady. I just can't. This is partially an AFC East thing. It's also just Tom Brady seems like a real dick thing. Mm-hmm. But I'm closer now to cheering for him than I ever have before, because it is kind of amazing what he's doing. And I would love to see him, you know, if he wins, then we start to get into the super GOAT conversation. And by that, I mean, he'll be known as the best football player of all time. But could somebody knock Jordan off of his perch? Because I think when you talk about the battle of the GOATs, the two unassailables are Ali and Jordan. It's like, hey, if you put all the greatest in the same room, it would be a coin flip between Ali and Jordan at the end of it. And I think with another Super Bowl, it might be a club of three. I think you could put Brady there.
I go a step further. I think, well, first off, once they came back from down 28-3 to beat Atlanta, Brady was the greatest football player of all time. It's like, okay, yeah, it's you. Maybe someone can make an argument for Jerry Rice. But it's like, okay, you're the greatest. There you go. If Brady wins on Sunday as the underdog, he surpasses Jordan as the greatest winner of all time.
See, now we have a debate. Okay, continue. Sorry, I just got excited here because this is a classic Macro and Cause stupid debate we're about to have.
Oh, it's right now. This incorporates. Well, that's a new word. Incorporates so many great sports talk radio debates. It would mean that Brady now has seven championships, not six. Also, he did it with a different infrastructure. At least Jordan always had Phil Jackson and Pippen. And it's not that Tampa isn't talented. They're plenty talented. But this was a team that never could get to the playoffs, always made mistakes, stupid penalties, lots of turnovers. Brady shows up and boom. He's like, what's so hard? Hey, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, what's so hard about this NFC thing? I've been here once. I've won as many of these championships in the NFC as you guys have. He goes and wins a Super Bowl against a Kansas City team that's 25-1 in their last 26 games when Mahomes have started. And boom, he goes ahead of Jordan.
It's such a great argument. And I'm going to use the standard Michael Jordan defense, which is never lost in a final. Mm-hmm. In fact, never even made it to a game seven in a final.
Do you know why he never lost in a final?
Because his teams were better than everybody else's.
Well, they were always the favorite. Mm-hmm. Now, admittedly, the Patriots were the favorite in that when they were 18-0 against the Giants. But the difference is, in the NBA, you've got a full best of, you got to win four. So that is a better measurement of who the truly best team is. If the Giants had played the Patriots in a seven-game series, I don't think Eli's winning that. So it's one game, anything can happen. And also, if Jordan didn't retire to go play baseball, I don't think that team, you know, they might have got to a finals. I don't know if they still would have kept winning, because eventually you get tired. At least he had a couple years break.
Well, and that's all good points. But then I could also say that Tom Brady is only an offensive player. that Jordan was the best defensive player in the game, in addition to being the best offensive player in the game.
Yep.
So his impact on the totality of those championships was greater. Tom Brady didn't have the ability to make a last minute stop because he wasn't on the field, whereas Jordan was always responsible for everything that happened.
Yep. So and that's the best counter.
Impact is a greater one.
Yep. And if you're going to the counter to everything I've said is that one on defense. When Tom Brady won a Super Bowl against Seattle, it wasn't because, I mean, he was great, but it doesn't happen unless Malcolm Butler makes that interception at the goal line.
Right. So, and I think that we'd all agree that Ali is in that category, but only because of extra sports considerations, because he wasn't even the best heavyweight of all time, never mind the best boxer of all time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Joe Louis was a better heavyweight. Sugar Ray Robinson was a better fighter. Like, you could probably come up off the top of your head with four or five fighters that were greater fighters than Ali, but there was never a greater figure. So that just feels like a different thing altogether. I feel brainwashed by Jordan because I lived it.
Yep.
And I know you did too. You did too. But I was a Bulls fan, whereas you were a Knicks fan.
Uh-huh.
So I loved him, and I'm not sure you probably did.
No, I did not.
Right. So we're coming at this from different angles.
Yeah. I the thing is, and this is the boring part. Both arguments are good ones, and both of them make sense. You know, and the significant thing, if Brady wins, however they win, the fact that now you can have the conversation of Brady over Jordan as the greatest winner, that in and of itself is an incredible accomplishment for Tom Brady. I think if he wins, I go Brady over Jordan, but the defense thing that you bring up is the best counter.
And I would also argue, knowing you as well as I do, that you would probably go with Brady because it would mean that Brady is the greatest of all time, and the Giants still beat him twice.
Oh, did they really? Hold on, let me check the old Google. Apparently you're right there, Bob. They did win twice, and they were the better team in both those games. Whammy.
I got to go help Charlotte with some homework, but can we leave this at this? We started with you making it about you, and we end with you making it about you.
Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.